Mr. Catlett, good morning to you. And Mr. Caples, good morning to you. Do either council have any questions before we begin? Then, Mr. Catlett, you may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice and other members of this court. My name is Matt Catlett. I represent the appellant in this matter, Pierce Williams. I suppose I should also acknowledge Mr. Caples here. I don't know what it is about crazy facts and cases that find me, but some reason they find me. So I got a magnet on me. So the two major issues, I'd like to, two major issues presented in this appeal are the effect of a defect in a citation purporting to summon a person to appear in court on the speedy trial calculation under 29-1207, and the kind of definition of good cause under 29-1207-4F. What we have here is we have a citation. So Nebraska Revised Statute Section 29-423 and 424 provides that when a citation is issued, it shall include the offense charged. It's kind of an interesting word, charged, because we all know that citations, at least in Nebraska, are not the charging document. At least but it says the offense charged. So what happens when the citation doesn't include that information? It says, hey, this is when you have to appear in court, but it doesn't include the offense charge. So in this case, there's a citation, and it purports to summon a person to appear in court on November 4th of 2020.
Let me just start right there. Was this an effective summons?
No, it was not. To me, this is no different than you at the grocery store in line and somebody hands you a piece of paper that says, show up to court on November 4th, 2020. That's what this is to me. And I don't think anybody would disagree that that is not effective to summon a person to appear in court at that time, such that there can be any consequences from the person's failure to appear in response to that piece of paper. You know, one of the interesting things in this case is that there's no actual evidence that the person who issued this citation was actually authorized by law to do so. You know, what happens then? So again, this almost literally is a situation where, based on the evidence that we have, this is just like a stranger that hands somebody a piece of paper that says, go to court on this day.
Are you talking about a failure of proof on the city's part?
Right. At the hearing on the motion for discharge, the city attorney did not actually put on any evidence. They didn't call the police officer. There was no affidavit. They didn't call an officer, whoever it was who purported to issue the summon, the citation. I think it said Abel or whatever the name was, and it had a number purporting to, I guess, to be a badge number. But there was no evidence. They didn't call this person and say, are you the person who did this? Were you, in fact, a law enforcement officer on this date? There was no evidence like that. Essentially, what happened is that the county court judge just looked at the copy of the citation and said, it was issued by this officer. I don't know how the county court determined that.
Are there some presumptions here involved?
I don't think so, not on a motion for discharge. It's got to be, I mean, the issue really the primary issue real as it relates to that particular assignment of error is whether the citation was effective to summon Williams to appear on November 4th of 2020. As
that may determine day one for speedy calculations? As it would. If you have an ineffective summons, do you nevertheless start the clock?
Well, the interesting thing about this is that there was actually a complaint filed 3 weeks or so before. The complaint filed by the city attorney was filed on October 12, 2020.
Okay,
what's interesting about that is that there's no indication that the complaint was served on Williams either.
Didn't he ultimately appear?
I'm sorry?
Did not he ultimately appear?
Yeah, he did.
And hand her a plea of not guilty?
Yeah, he did. He did. So, again, the timing here, just to be clear, citation, we don't even know when it was issued. The only thing we know for sure is that it was issued before October 12th of 2020, because that was the day that the city attorney filed the actual written charging complaint. And then what we have is a copy of the citation. Williams doesn't appear on November 4th, 2020, and the judge enters a journal entry order saying something like telephone message on file. Court continues it to next week. Williams doesn't appear then. A warrant is issued for his arrest, and then 3 months later, whatever it is, 2.5 months later, on January, I think it was 27th of 2021, Williams appears. As far as we know, he just found out that there was a warrant for his arrest. I mean, again, as far as we know.
He wasn't picked up on the warrant,
though. No, he just goes to court. Whether or not that's a wise procedure, but this is a common thing that happens in county courts. People find out they got a warrant, and instead of turning themselves into the jail or a police officer, they just go to court. Somehow they get scheduled to have a, you know, resetting, and the warrant gets recalled, the matter gets set for docket call, and then a trial. So, interesting issue about what would have happened had Williams never showed up on the warrant. Had he just waited until 6 months after October 12th of 2020 and then showed up on the warrant? The state or the city attorney never dismissed the complaint. They could have. They could have dismissed it. They could have dismissed it without prejudice and refiled it. They didn't do that.
The speedy trial here starts to run with the filing
of the complaint. Yeah, that's what the statute says. You know, the fact that a copy of the citation was filed in this case, I'm not even sure why, you know. There is a rule, a statute, and there's a court rule that allows a court to deem a copy of the citation to constitute the complaint, but that's not what happened in this case. In this case, there was an actual complaint filed on October 12, 2020, and so that is the date that we start the clock.
So you're contesting, do I get it correctly or understand it correctly, you're contesting two parts of the calculation?
Yes.
Trial, and those are?
Well, the first part is the period from October 12th. So the county court judge and ultimately the district court says, hey, the period from November 4th, 2020 to April 12, 21 is excludable. The county court says it's, you know, November 4th to the 12th is excludable under 4B, right, a continuance granted. And then 11-12-20 to 4-12-21, that's excludable under 4D, absence or unavailability. In the district court's analysis, it just sort of, the district court judge said 4B, right, indefinite continuance. Yeah, we're contending that the period, for that entire period from 11-4-2020 all the way until when he reappeared, that's not excludable time, you know?
And why?
Because the citation was not effective to summon him to appear in court. It did not give him proper notice. It didn't include the offense charged. I acknowledge that the statute doesn't itself provide any remedy for a citation that fails to comply with the statute. But I think about this case as this. Can a person lawfully be convicted of, right, Nebraska Revised Statute Section 29-426, any person failing to appear or otherwise comply with the command of a citation shall be guilty of a misdemeanor, et cetera, et cetera. The courts in Nebraska have never apparently been called on to address whether a person may be lawfully convicted of violating that statute where the citation does not include the offense charged. And I don't think this court will ever be presented with that, because I can't believe such a charge being filed in the first place. So that is really what that particular issue comes down to, is can a person be lawfully convicted of violating 29.426 where the citation does not include the offense charge? It's the same issue, really.
Is that a plea and bar issue or a plea and abatement or what? Is it one of those?
Yeah, I don't think so. The county court judge mentioned something about, well, there wasn't a motion to quash file. But a motion to quash is a motion that is directed towards the complaint, the charging document. There's nothing wrong with the complaint in this case at all. So motion to quash a citation where there is a complaint, subsequent complaint, it just doesn't make any sense.
What's your understanding?
Totally out of time now.
What's your understanding of the elements of a charge under 29.426?
Failing to appear or otherwise comply with the command of a citation.
So is this not a citation if it lacks the charge?
Right.
That's the position that it's
yeah.
It's no longer
a citation that is blank is you cannot possibly be convicted of not complying with the command of a citation that doesn't comply with the statute. We're not even talking about some kind of technical compliance. Actually, there's other problems with the citation, too. It doesn't include a date of issuance. So there's a separate statute that says that it has to be issued at least, 3 days prior unless the defendant consents. But, yeah, that's absolutely my contention, is that it is just a blank piece of paper that somebody hands you at the grocery store parking lot and says, go to court. There is nobody who would go to court. I would certainly wouldn't. I just would throw that in the garbage can and say, that's nothing to me. So I'm totally out of time. Unless
Before you sit down, yeah. You also are contesting a second part of the calculation.
Yeah, I'm out of time. But I will say, this is a, 4F provides that the time is excluded for good cause. Now, in this case, there was a trial that was to take place in April of 2021. Mr. Williams showed up. And I don't know, apparently the judge or somebody in the courtroom observed Williams either attempting to or actually making a recording with his cell phone. And so the judge and Mr. Williams had, who was pro se at the time, had some discussion about the propriety of that. And, it was pretty clear the judge was frustrated with Williams, but never cited him in contempt of court, never warned him that he would be cited in contempt of court, never told his bailiff, courtroom bailiff or deputy to seize Mr. Williams' phone.
He says something to the effect of, why don't you talk to somebody?
Right, yeah, something like, I'd like you to seriously consider the ramifications or implications.
So why is that not good cause?
Not to continue a trial, that sort of gratuitous advice, not sure that the county judge cared much whether or not Mr. Williams considered the ramifications. I think the most important thing was that he not record the trial with his cell phone, have been dealt with right then and there and should have been dealt with.
Wouldn't that actually have been more of a movement of a gesture of leniency by the county court judge as opposed to something that should be dissuaded? He was, as opposed to having him arrested or held in contempt, or that he was giving him an opportunity to speak to someone about it?
He didn't say go talk to a lawyer or anything like that. I don't view that to be a gesture of goodwill in any way. I view this to be frustration on the part of a judge that, with Mr. Williams, and, frustration on the part of a judge is not itself good cause for a judge to continue a trial. So, you look at the Bill of Exceptions in this case, it's just a few pages. this didn't take a long time, just a few remarks. Back and forth, and I think even Williams himself said, hey, if you want to, take it, and let's have our trial. Everybody's ready for trial, they're there. No reason for a continuance in this case. And I'll submit that we do need both in this case, that is Mr. Williams, in order to succeed on appeal needs this court to find that both the periods from November 4th to, you know, April 12th or whatever the trial date in April was, and then until June or whenever the trial was reset, we need both of that to meet the 6 months. Way out of time. Thank you very much for indulging me.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cables, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rob Cables. I'm an assistant city attorney here in Lincoln. I was the attorney handling the hearing on the absolute discharge motion, and Mr. Catt was there as well. So this case started with a complaint filed in October of 2020, and the end of the case leading to this point was in November of 2021 with the absolute discharge motion. So a little more than a year from filing to discharge motion. We filed the complaint in October, and the court found as a factual matter that the defendant filed a motion to continue from his first arraignment date. Phone call was received by the court approximately 14 minutes prior to that hearing, and it indicated the defendant was asking for a continuance, and that was Exhibit 2, which was offered at the discharge hearing.
And so it was just I think Mr. Catlett and his client contest that as to hearsay and what is...
That's correct. And the district court ultimately found that the rules of evidence don't apply. It was a preliminary hearing. It was a preparatory to the ultimate issue itself. It didn't involve a question of guilt.
So has this court ever settled whether or not this is a preliminary matter or whether or not the rules of evidence apply?
Not in the context of a discharge motion. The court has done it in a preliminary hearing.
So do we need to decide that here?
I think it would be helpful. Certainly, in this case, this appellant doesn't believe it applies. And as a defendant, Mr. Williams argued that it didn't. So I think it would be helpful to this body of case law that the court has been expanding on discharge motions.
So why should we decide in your favor?
Well, the case law thus far on the rules of evidence and the statute excludes it from preliminary hearings in criminal cases. This is a preliminary hearing in the context. It's preliminary to the trial and it's preparatory to the ultimate issue. Didn't involve an issue of guilt or innocence, and that's ultimately how this court has characterized whether the rules of evidence apply or don't apply.
So is that correct? Your belief is that this was a preliminary hearing as used in the statute?
Correct. It's not a preliminary hearing in the context of a felony case. It's a preliminary, as in it's preliminary to any ultimate issue of guilt. It's a pretrial matter.
I'm sorry, in a felony?
No, it's not a preliminary hearing that would be a felony defendant might be entitled to a preliminary hearing before bound over to district
this
court.
This just happens to also be called a preliminary hearing?
Well, the statute refers
to... Because it's preliminary to some other stuff?
You're arguing that preliminary in this statutory context is a generic term, not specific to a determination of probable cause.
Yes, that is correct.
Preliminary to other things happening in the course of the trial.
It's right. Preliminary and preparatory to
your
the
argument that anything that happens before the trial.
Correct.
The rules of evidence would not apply.
Well, in this case, it was both preliminary and preparatory, and that's how the district court ruled. So, I mean, we didn't go into, I mean, I briefed it to the district court about why it wasn't hearsay. I mean, there was no truth to be argued about whether he really did need a continuance. It wasn't an issue of whether it was actually factual that he had some family issue that required him to have a continuance. The court took it as his motion to continue, that's as a factual matter, and so we went on from there. So and if he didn't file that motion to continue, then he just failed to appear. If he failed to appear, then all those days are excluded regardless. So
I'm going back to where I started with Mr. Catlett, was the citation an effective summons?
Yes, Your Honor. It was a uniform complaint and citation, and the court, as a factual matter, determined that it was sufficient to require him to appear in court. It had the date, it had the time, it had the place to appear. The district court found that.
Did it have the nature of the charge?
Well, the record is not at all.
I beg your pardon, because there's some reference here to whiteouts, and I don't know if that's.
There's some dicta in the county court's ruling about how the charge itself had been whited out because it was not the charging document. So that itself, the complaint could have been used as the complaint. The city chose not to use it as the complaint. We filed a separate complaint and used the citation as an addendum to the complaint. So we don't want two charging documents that may or may not conflict. So,
do they conflict?
No, and if you look at the record and you look at the court copy of the citation that was filed with the complaint, there's obviously a missing piece to that. It's just not there. There's no box to check. It's just gone. The record does not include.
If someone summons you to appear to answer for something, show up and we'll tell you what.
Well, that's the court copy. The defendant gets his own copy.
So
how do we know that? Did you have some obligation to have the police officer appear or have an affidavit from the police officer or somehow show what the original citation looked like?
I don't believe it was necessary to have a police officer appear. The burden of proof at the hearing on motion for discharge is the greater weight of the evidence. The greater weight of the evidence in this case included that uniform complaint and citation form issuing a date, a time, a place to appear, a signature in the defendant's line.
To appear for what?
Well, I believe it said, I don't know if it said it to appear in court at 10:30 on X date or on November 4th in this case.
For what reason?
I don't recall if it said arraignment or not arraignment, but it was.
What charge?
We don't know. The record does not include.
Is that your responsibility to make that record?
Yes, and the state has the burden to prove by the greater weight of the evidence that the defendant, there was a not excludable days. That was the issue at the motion for discharge.
So what probably happened here is the citation was correct and it checked assault or something, and then your office or somebody whited that out and attached it to the complaint. But there's some question here about what the defendant was actually summoned to or why.
There's multiple copies to a citation, one of which, by statute, goes to the person cited. There's nothing in the record to indicate that there was some defect in his copy, and that is the one that matters, not the court copy. It's his copy. So if he were missing something.
We don't know what that is, and none of the other judges that have reviewed this know what that original citation is.
That's correct. And if
I will ask you one more time, whose burden is that to show?
Well, we can't show what his copy is because it's his copy. So he has it. He could offer it into evidence, but, I mean, it didn't exist.
Well, the officer drafted it. The officer checked the boxes, presumably, so that would be the evidence you would show. The officer said, well, I did this, this, and this, and I checked the box for the offense, and I cited him for, and I gave him the copy. That's
correct.
How you prove it.
And at trial, if he were charged with failing to appear on that day, we would do that because the burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. And there's been a lot of talk by counsel here about consequences and convictions and can I be found guilty of this or that. But, I mean, he's not been found guilty of anything. We haven't had a trial. This is more than 2 years down the road. So I think at the hearing on the motion for discharge, given the burden of proof at that point, the court had sufficient evidence to find that those were excludable days by starting at his non-appearance on his arraignment date, either by his continuance, which the court found is a factual matter, and the court, unless the court abused its discretion.
Before you run out of time, you want to talk about the second time period,
the good cause?
Yes.
Yes. You know, and mathematically, that second period really, I mean, that It doesn't change the outcome of the case because there's 159 days of delay between arraignment and April 12th, which is the first trial date. There's 57 days, I believe, between the first trial date and the second trial date, so that's the good cause part of it. That's not enough days because there's a big chunk of time that is uncontested.
With Mr. Catlett about his initial complaint that you've just addressed, you need those second, that second.
I don't think mathematically those days change the outcome. There is 155 days of delay after June 8th. June 8th was the second day for trial. Allegedly, the defendant failed to appear on that date, leading to several more periods of delay. So that chunk of time after July or June 8th is not contested in this appeal. That's 155 days. So 155 days moves the last speedy trial date into mid-September. So really, there's 58, 59
If we days. Disagree with you on that, why was good cause shown?
Well, I hope the court does rule on this because, I mean, the court had, I think, lots of restraint about how it handled that case. And the defendant was very clearly causing problems and videotaping and arguing with the court, not obeying the court's orders, and creating a disruption to the orderly proceedings. So there wasn't going to be an orderly trial at that case at that time. So rather than holding him in contempt or imposing some sort of other sanction, the case was continued, and the court has wide discretion to do that, and that should be for good cause. So I think the court was well within its authority to do that. And again, it only accounted for that little piece of time between the first trial date and the second trial date. But if Mr. Williams wanted a trial on April 12th, he could have had one. He just needed to listen to the judge, and he wasn't going to do that, and the record shows that. So again, 155 days at the end are uncontested. That's not quite half of the time included here, but going back to the original failed to appear or continuance, as the district court found, I mean, there's plenty of time to push the speedy trial date into 2022, in which case the defendant waived his right to a speedy trial because we showed up for trial numerous times, and he either wasn't there or on the first date caused enough problems to cause it to get continued. And that was his language, Ed, when he was there on April 12th. Hey, if you need to continue this, go ahead. If you need to continue this, but I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And that's what the court was dealing with. And that's, so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
We have no time for rebuttal. Counsel, that concludes arguments in State v. Williams. You are excused. Thank you very much. Our next case of the day, then, is State v. Valadez.